This is XTP Media.
Hi, I'm Anthony Lindberg, Creative Director at Basic 6, and this episode is brought to you with the support of Basic 6. Basic 6 t-shirts are organic and ethically made. If you want a great t-shirt that shows that you know enough about aviation and aerospace by the designs they display, then get over to basic6.co.uk. Shipped anywhere in the world, you will get a 10% discount by using the promo code EXTENDED. You can only get this discount through this promotion, so wear the Aerospace to be seen in t-shirt. Go to basic6.co.uk. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 26 of Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station. And joining me today are my great friends and presenters. Firstly, editor-in-chief of aerospace magazine, Tim Robinson.
Hello there.
And editor of Global Aviation Resource, Gareth Stringer.
Hello, how you doing?
And in this episode, we have a look at some news. We talk a little bit about what we've been up to since the last episode. We have a listen to my recent flight in the Tiger Moth. We've got a new X10, our top 10 from Tim, along with a new Pods Challenge, listener feedback, and of course, promoting aerospace. So let's get going, and as always, we get started by looking at what's caught our eye in aerospace news. And the first news item on the list is the Swiss voters have rejected the Gripen, Tim. How can that happen?
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a blow to the Saab and the Gripen. It's kind of ironic because obviously it's one of the richest countries in the Western world and it's one of the most affordable Western fighters. And the voters have come back and said, we don't think we can afford the Gripen. So it's going to be very, very interesting there and see what whether they go back to square one, whether they have to do the competition in a few years, whether maybe Eurofighter or Rafale or maybe the Boeing Super Hornet come back and get a second bite of the cherry.
They're both more expensive, aren't they?
They're both more expensive. I mean, you know, the Gripen's great selling point is it's cheaper, you know, cheaper to run than the twin engined for twin engine fighters than the something like the Eurofighter, something like the Rafale. So where do you go from here? You know, in 2 years, in 2-3 years, you know, can you persuade the electorate again? Because the whole thing was done on a referendum. You know, so direct democracy in action. The people spoke. Whoever was doing the pro argument of we've got to get some new fighters to replace our Hornets obviously didn't do a good enough job. And then it's back to sort of it's going to be back to square one. I mean,
yeah.
So it could be that they go on and they decide, well, actually, the threat has changed. We're just going to be like Iceland. We're just going to be like the Baltics. We don't need a fast jet force.
But, I mean, given events in the Baltics, surely this is waking everyone up to the real demand for and the need for this sort of aircraft.
It could be, but then again, they quite decide we just need something like a jet trainer and basic jet trainer able to intercept airliners.
As we saw on the last episode, there was an issue with the Swiss escorting the Ethiopian hijacked airliner because they weren't available, and I think it was left to the French and the Italians. So hardly a great track record.
And the amazing thing with that, again, is even with that sort of, the Swiss Air Force is closed at weekends, that still wasn't enough to swing it to get some cheap fighters.
Yeah, yeah, it's bizarre.
So, they've got a couple of years in play before the time runs out on the Hornets, that they've got. But it's still kind of an interesting decision there and shows how hard it is. People sort of point to the F-35 or the Eurofighter as well. Aircraft are too expensive, etc. It turns out for some countries, Gripen is too expensive. Go figure.
Yeah. From a Saab point of view, is a deal in Brazil going to soften the blow?
A little bit, yeah. I think they're still going. Gripen E is still going ahead for the Swedish Air Force for one, and the Brazilian is sort of chosen, but they're still working out the details. So it's not all bad news for Saab, it has to be said. But it's a little bit of a sort of a disappointment there. And it just raises questions. Is that the end of the fighter arm in Switzerland?
Well, let's move on to our next story, which is across the borders, as one would say, and the Russian Air Force is to receive its new generation long-range bombers in 2023, the PAC-DA Next Generation Long-Range Bomber. The Russians are going for long-range bombers in pretty much, analog-type aircraft. Is this a strategic move to up the ante against the Western forces, or do you think there's a real need for these big old aircraft that we used to see and love? They seem to be continuing along that route.
You have to remember that the Russian armed forces went for a whole period in the 1990s where they did not modernize anything, so the whole their development, which sort of stopped with the Tu-160, equivalent to the B-2, I suppose, in the US. So they never the B-2, B-1, the B-1B. So there's never any sort of B-2 stealth bomber. So really, they're sort of catching up from where America was with the B-2, and again, Tu-95s, great aircraft. Some of them were actually constructed, I think, in the sort of late 80s, so they're not that old, even though they look older, but it's an old design anyway, and they're looking to modernise. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of the Tupolev design bureaus, whether it's going to be a sort of a flying wing, whether it's going to be as sort of stealthy as a B-2, or whether it's going to have sort of designed to be a bit cheaper so as they can more of them.
I think the thing that surprised me about the stories that were coming out about this is how few strategic aircraft the Russians had. I say few, we're talking about 76 aircraft roughly that are available to the Russian Air Force, the Strategic Air Force. I was quite surprised by that. I suppose I'm still used to those Cold War days where there were always thousands lined up on one side and thousands on the other.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you're dead right. Only 13 Tu-160s. You look at something else as well, like the tanker force that the Russians have, and compared to the hundreds of tankers that the US has, it's a fraction. So their power projection isn't really that great compared to sort of the US at all.
Let's not forget though that one of the things that the first U-2 overflights of the Soviet Union proved that the massed forces weren't as big even then as people thought, because everyone saw these sort of grainy film footage of hordes of bombers, sort of Mayday parades over Moscow. And one of the things that the U-2 proved that there actually wasn't that many of them, and they realised that footage, that was the same aircraft basically flying around in circles. It wasn't an endless line of bomber after bomber. But,
maybe that's what the RAF needs to do. We'll just have three typhoons, and they'll just keep going round and round and round.
Definitely point taken. That number, particularly that 13 TU-160, is it's like, what? Is that it?
I know. It just seems like such a small number. And as we know, they've had some maintenance issues with their fleets of late. So I doubt there's even that many that are actually airworthy. Okay, let's come closer to home. We're going to get to see the Scorpion, this Textron's new Scorpion tactical jet. It's been announced last week that we're going to get to see it at Farnborough. This is an interesting one. It sort of came out of left field, this aircraft, in the first instance, but they're certainly getting it out and about.
Doesn't it look fantastic, by the way? I think it looks so cool. I mean, this is amazing. This is a manufacturer that I'm guessing most people listening, probably like me, not necessarily familiar with. It's certainly not a Boeing, or a Lockheed Martin or anything like that. And they are bringing this tactical jet, as it's described, from Wichita, I think they're based.
That's right.
It's Cessna, isn't it? Let's see if they can drum up some business. And I think it's a fantastic, apart from anything else, I think it's a fantastic story. This is what people used to do. They used to make their aircraft and take them to the trade shows and try and sell them. And
absolutely.
And how brilliant. We all know that the biggies do that, but to see a company which possibly hasn't got that sort of instant recognition, I think it's fantastic.
Funded themselves, and 3 years, 2012 they started with this aircraft, and expect to have it in production in 2015. It's quite unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, they've used a lot of sort of stuff from their business jet sort of experience on it, and really it's a shot in the dark as far as the kind of market niche is. It is, is there a gap between the high cost, the expensive to run jet fighters, and the lower cost, slower sort of turboprops that people have. Is there a niche where you want something with a bit more poke, faster sort of a jet that can bridge the gap and do these sort of things where it's air policing, it's border patrol, it's coin, it's surveillance, and a jet Super Tucano, if you like. So it's going to be interesting to see if there is a market there.
Well, we said the Gripen was cheap. I'm sure this aircraft will have a lot of suitors, I think, in some parts of the world where some of the current generation aircraft are just unaffordable. Okay, well, we'll leave the news there, but let's just have a little chat. There's been an awful lot going on around and about us recently. Gareth, let's start with you. Some good articles coming up in GAR. There's a lot going on. What's been going on with you recently?
Yeah, GAR's sort of D-Day 70th coverage is in full swing, and at the time of recording, a number of the chaps were at the D-Day 70th anniversary show at the Imperial War Museum, Duxford, over the weekend. So I know in the days to come, that one will be covered in great depth. And also, and this is rather nice, we've actually got a number of guys going over to Normandy over the next couple of weeks to cover the anniversary from there. And we're also going to be working, got a couple of chaps going down to Leon Solent to cover the sort of big mass trip of Dakotas, which is happening as well. So we kind of got that covered from all angles. And really now I think that the team, where there's lots happening, but we're really gearing up for air show season in the UK, in the next sort of couple of months particularly. And we've got some nice things coming up on the site, which hopefully we're going to get those on extended as well. So hoping to do some work with this year's Apache display team. We've also lined up some time with the Swiss Hornet display pilot that's coming over to the UK this year. So it's sort of all calm before the storm, I think, probably.
Tim, you were back in the UK, I think, the day before yesterday. And for those who follow you, you've been out the country for the best part of a week. You've had a pretty exciting time.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I was on a media visit, so I was out visiting Honeywell, which is obviously a aerospace company that is doing a lot of exciting things. They've got they do avionics, they do APUs. They do flight management systems. They're working on sort of 3D printing, quite a sort of a varied and diverse range of products. And we were able to get a sort of an insight into what they're, you know, that they'd never done this before, never done a sort of an international media event, and have a look at what they are working on. So that was great. You know, highlight of the week there was with Honeywell was probably having a jump seating on one of their Convair 580. Flight test bed, which is a turbo propeller and a built in 1952, and it's equipped with sort of a TCAS and a enhanced ground proximity warning system to go up and fly to go and find some mountains to fly it and test the EPGWS. So it was great fun. You know, why a Convair 580? Well, apparently, it was when they got it in the 1990s. It was the one in something that had a 30-inch that's what they could take, a 30-inch radar. That was they were testing their latest radar at that point, and it had to have something that was large enough to fit a 30-inch a radar dish. And from that week also, I went down and had a look at Pima Air Museum in Tucson. And related to that is the Boneyard.
Oh, jealous.
which is Avgeek Mecca. It's, you know, Scrapyard Challenge. It's just huge. 4,000-plus aircraft in storage there, U.S. aircraft. It's where the U.S. sort of military dumps all its unused aircraft. So driving around that for an hour, it was staggering. You know, C-130s as far as the eye can see. You've got F-16s lined up, F-4s. You know, T-34 Beech. You know, Mentors there that were this kind of, you know, all there in the Arizona, in the desert. I mean, crazy,
unbelievable. Very, very jealous. Well, let's take a quick break, and after the break, we'll talk about the air show season.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
Welcome from the Royal Aeronautical Society. The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
The Airplane Geeks invite you to join us for the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's Become a Pilot Family Day and Aviation Display. This June 14, 2014 event will be held at the Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center, located in Chantilly, Virginia, adjacent to Dulles International Airport. Besides viewing the museum's amazing indoor aircraft displays, you'll have an opportunity to walk around the 50 or so visiting vintage, recreational, and home-built aircraft at an outdoor display and meet the pilots. The event features presentations, tours, and hands-on activities for all ages. And as in past years, we'll set up our mobile studio inside the museum and record interviews and content for the podcast, so be sure to come by and say hello. We're also planning a social event that evening at a local restaurant, and we hope you'll be able to join us for some food, drink, and great AvGeek conversation. So that's Saturday, June 14, 2014, at the Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center. Bring your friends and family for a really unique experience at the National Air and Space Museum's Become a Pilot Day. For more information, visit airplanegeeks.com/become a pilot. And we'll see you there.
Well, we talked earlier about the Textron Scorpion coming over, and of course we're lucky enough to have the F-35, but this air show season this year, probably one of the most exciting to look forward to. I think I did see that we're going to get a Harrier to Farnborough as well. Was it a Spanish one, as we thought?
Yeah, that's a Spanish one. That's going to be a Spanish AV-8. Is it AV-8B?
I think it's a B. Yeah, you're right. So that's to look forward to. But of course, we've got all of the D-Day activity as well. And of course, we've got the potential for the two Lancasters to fly together. I mean, a sight to behold that, you know, will probably never be seen again.
I just cannot wait for that. And it's going to be a spectacular sight. And sound, basically, and I already know there's a lot of people planning to basically go around to every single show that that they're both going to be at. Such is the appeal, and I have to say, from a personal point of view, to be able to book the aircraft to come down to Dawlish Air Show in August was a real pleasure, and we're very, very much looking forward to welcoming them down. And you're right, Peter. It's it is going to be a, you know, almost unique, once in a lifetime opportunity for most of us, I'm sure.
I mean, someone needs to really sort of think about that, about getting the Vulcan, getting the Canberra up in the air together with those Lanks.
Yeah,
what a photo shoot!
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. We are very lucky. I know we've talked about this many a time in the past about what we get to see, but I think it's going to be particularly special this year. What are we planning to go to? I think we'll be at Farnborough in one form or other, so we'll bring some news from there. Where else are we planning to get to this season?
For me, I'll be going to the shows at Throckmorton, RAF Cosford, RAF Waddington. I'll be working in the press office at Fairford for the duration of Riat, and straight into Farnborough. After Farnborough will be Yeovilton for me, at which point I'll probably collapse in a heap in the corner and start to get ready for Dawlish, which is at the back end of August, which is a working one for me, obviously. And then really, you know, get into September and kind of see what else is around. But this beauty is that if you're that keen, there's not that many weekends from, you know, sort of June onwards where you can't go and find something.
Yeah. How about you, Tim? I know when I met you at Farnborough 2 years ago, you were solid 5 days there.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be reporting from Farnborough for Aerospace the whole week, so we'll be there. We'll also be covering a little bit and getting to Riat. Obviously, F-35 is going to be a Riat, but also we've got a nice little bit of news about the Japanese Air Self-Defense is confirmed that it will be taking attending the Air to 2. So that's a sort of, they're going to come back with a tanker there.
Yeah.
KC-767J tanker. And then just on sort of a go and see something, sort of spare time, probably Flying Legends is a must. And the Shuttleworth at some point.
Okay, well, great stuff. We'll have content probably from most of those to put into the show. We've also got a space special lined up as well, so plenty to bring to you. Okay, after this break then, you get to hear my report of my flight in the Tiger Moth.
Aviation media has long been the domain of the newspapers and magazines.
Well, not anymore. I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran, and we're bringing aviation right into your radio.
Yes, we're making aviation cool and interesting for everyone.
Hang on, aviation's always been cool. Check this out.
How cool is this?
Grant, Grant, turn that down. Here at Plane Crazy Down Under, we've got pilots, engineers, air traffic controllers, industry leaders, even politicians dropping by to talk to us about the amazing world of aviation right here in Australia and occasionally in New Zealand as well.
Wow, that's cooler than I thought, mate.
Find us at planecrazydownunder.com, on iTunes, or lurking about on other people's podcasts just like this one.
We've got crazy accents and lots of great aviation content.
And we promise not to talk about the cricket.
No, never, not the cricket.
Quack, 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 quack.
What is cricket anyhow?
Something we win a lot. Oh, there
we go.
Crossing 60 West, 60 West, get a cell call check with New York on frequency 13306. New York.
Caribbean,
13306
with New York,
4322. Thank you. Break, break, Caribbean flight calling New York.
Okay, Caribbean 600, we have a fuel problem. We need to divert to Bermuda. We are 80 miles south of Skipper.
Okay, say your intention is on diversion.
We are 38,000 feet, 18 south of Skipper. We need to go to Bermuda. Standby.
And Caribbean 600, are you declaring an emergency at this time?
That's affirmative, that's affirmative. We are declaring an emergency, we need to go to Bermuda.
Roger, I'll advise ATC, standby one.
Okay, we need a turn towards Bermuda. We are just about 300 miles from Bermuda, Caribbean 600.
Roger that, I'll advise ATC, standby. Caribbean
600,
New York.
Caribbean 600, standby 1 sec, Caribbean 600.
Standby.
Okay, New York, Caribbean 600, we'd like to get, if you have the weather for Norfolk, Norfolk weather would be, okay, negative, we'd like to go to Bermuda, Caribbean 600.
Roger, standby 1. Caribbean 600, when able, please let me know the nature, what's the problem with the fuel, and say your present position. What's your present position?
We are 70 miles south of Skipper, and we are only getting fuel off of one tank. We have 3,300 kilos remaining, Caribbean 600.
So 2,300 kilos of fuel remaining, and say again, how far are you, 70 south of Skipper?
Okay, presently 67 south of Skipper, Caribbean 600. At the point Skipper, we can't continue on to New York. From Skipper, we can't continue on to New York, Caribbean 600.
Copy, from Skipper, you can continue to New York. Roger, standby. Caribbean 600, I have a clearance for you.
Caribbean 600, go.
Caribbean 600, New York ATC, cleared Caribbean 600, cleared destination airport, Tango X-ray, Kilo Foxtrot, direct. Read back.
Cleared Tango X-ray, Kilo Foxtrot, direct, Caribbean 600.
Caribbean 600, read back is correct, and also...
New York, Caribbean 600.
Caribbean 600, New York.
Preferred airport now will be Kilo Oscar Romeo Foxtrot. Kilo Oscar Romeo Foxtrot.
Confirm you are not going to Bermuda, you're going to Norfolk?
That's affirmative. It's going to be a closer alternative this time to get to Norfolk, Caribbean 600.
say you're not going to Bermuda, you're going to Norfolk. I will advise ATC. Please stand by. And also, I need Caribbean 600. Caribbean 600, I also need to know, say again, the Endurance fuel on board in hours and minutes. Also, number of souls on board.
Caribbean 600, Endurance. Stand by, Caribbean 600.
Standing by.
I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's own aviation podcast. I like to listen to Extended.
Okay, it was a lovely day down at Compton Abbas, and I really want to thank my pilot, Amanda Harrison, and the support technician, Rita, for a really great trip. Now, it's an open cockpit, so sound quality is a bit noisy during the time we're in the air.
So it's a little bit cramped. We'll get very cosy, and it'll be very noisy and smelly if you've not flown even to the PA-28s. Normally I take off and fly around, and I'll have a little, we'll try and spot where you live, and then what I'll do is I get tired, so then I hand you it control. It's a stick in front. I can move, I can do it both ways, can't I? Stick in front. It's very easy. Left, right, down, up.
Yeah.
Very small movements give very big movements outside. So if you do very small movements, give very big movements outside.
Okay.
Exactly what. So if you push it like that, it'll give you that kind of movement. You only need small movements. Because we're travelling at 70 miles an hour, which is the same as a car in the air, but you won't feel that because you won't have anything to sort of like look down on it.
Okay.
It's a stick in front. If I have to take control at any point, I'll just waggle it, and it'll feel very different to turbulence.
Yeah.
And just take your hands off.
Yeah.
And if at any point you don't like what I'm doing, say we're chucking about a bit at the end and you don't like what I'm doing, just put your thumb on top if you can't hear me. Rita's going to give you the safety brief as we get in.
Okay.
And then we'll get you all strapped in, and have we go flying.
As you step up, make sure you only step on anything that's black. Step in, stand on the seat with both feet first, and then lower yourself down in, because there's not a lot of room for manoeuvrability in there.
Right.
You're fine to hang on to the struts.
Okay.
Or to turn on the buckle as you put each one in.
Okay, so. All right,
That's it. If you lean forward, I'll get the back one. Lovely. Now, they don't have to be tight, tight, but it's how you feel comfortable.
Okay.
Just pull on the and again with the top ones.
Okay.
Some people like to know that they're strapped in.
That's comfortable.
Right, this is your 1940s airbag.
Yes.
In the event of an emergency landing, arms across your face and brace yourself against air, okay?
Right.
If for any reason the plane should land upside down,
don't
release your buckle from here, because you'll press and turn, they'll all fall out, and this is a very long drop when the plane's upside down.
Okay.
If you lift the tabs here, you can feed the straps out and give yourself a controlled descent when necessary.
Okay.
For all other emergencies, the little paper bag is there.
Okay. I should be okay, but...
I'm sure you will be. Communications are a bit... You know, I mean, they're not perfect, but they're not too bad. So when I've connected you up, I've plugged them in here.
Yeah.
You will hear Amanda at all times.
Yeah.
But to speak to Amanda, you need to press the button.
Okay.
And because it's an add-on, it's a little bit flimsy. So if you put your two fingers behind and press with your thumb.
Okay, so press to speak.
It just makes, press to speak. And as Amanda said, these controls are so sensitive.
Yeah.
An old pilot friend of mine said, if you grab the stick like that, you automatically...
putting stress into you,
contracting your muscles, so you'll pull back. Fingers and thumbs, and it is enough, although it feels doesn't feel like it on the ground. In the air it is.
Right.
Right, look, an aeroplane's making noise. There's another couple of switches out here, so if you happen to stick your hand out, don't flip those down when you're going round, because it all goes very quiet then. Right, stick in front of you, left, right, down, up, very small movements, don't press that button, that's the eject button, that's the torque to tower button.
Okay.
Rita's shown you that one there,
yeah.
Do it as the pincer movement.
Okay.
That's the throttle, and she said all the other levers to leave alone.
Yeah.
And we'll do the I have control, you have control, and I say I'll waggle it if I need to take control.
Okay, and what was the signal you said on my head?
Yeah, if you're not happy and you can't hear one another, just put your thumb on your head like that. It's rather than trying to stick it outside in the slipstream, stick it on top of your head.
Okay, wonderful.
Marvellous. Right, we're ready to rock and roll.
Okay.
If you want to...
Okay, don't forget to wave on your right hand side. Okay, Peter, can you still hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Marvellous. So you can see you picked a nice day for it.
I set
your altimeter on zero, which is just a pressure altimeter, so if you look at the bottom left-hand one, you'll find that we're about 600 meters above ground, Okay. And we're probably about 800 feet above ground here, because remember, Compton's on the top of the hill. So we're probably, I think we look about between 8 and 1,000 feet up here. Here's Blanford coming up on our left-hand side. And then for the sort of like stuff for the radio, you've got how fast we're going in the top left-hand dial, and you've got knots per hour, so that's probably saying about 70 knots. Which is about 80 miles per hour, and then if you look out on the wing, on the left wing, you'll see a metal device on the strut, and that was actually the speedometer that they used to have, and that did used to have all the numbers on, but because it's been used so much, all the numbers have rubbed off, and that basically just tells you how fast you're going with the wind being pushed back. And then if we look inside again, we've got the left hand and right-hand turn, the side slip on the big dial at the top. Then you've got the compass, which is the same compass that sat in the Spitfire, which is like a nautical compass, which you, the compass moves in the bottom and the dial stays still on the top, which is quite an art to figure out you're reading it.
See that.
And then you've got RPM on the other side, on the right-hand side, and we tend to fiddle around at about 1700. That gives us about sort of 70 to 80 knots. But it doesn't feel like we're going 70 to 80 knots, does it?
No, not at all.
But that's why people think that it's bumpy, because if you think in reality on a motorway, if you hit a pothole, you'd feel the same amount of bumping, and that's all it is. We're just hitting potholes in the sky.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you look in front of you now, you'll see some wires coming down. And you'll see a disc in front of you on the second wire along, and that should be sat on or around the horizon.
Okay.
And that's where this aeroplane flies straight and level. So I'm just going to turn around just a little bit towards home. There we are. Okay, so do you want to have a go at flying her?
Yes, please.
Okay, so take the stick and remember, small movements give big movements outside. You have,
okay.
You have control.
I have control.
Excellent. That's good. Very nice.
She's a lot more sensitive than I
Yeah. I can make a bet with everybody that says that. You'll laugh when you read that section in the book. Yeah, she's much more sensitive than whatever you would have learnt in. This was the ultimate training model, so this is why they went from here to the Spitfire, because if you can't fly this, that's it, you can't fly. And she's brilliant because she demands to be flown all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas other airplanes sit and you put them on the trim and that's fine, but this one, she's really quite difficult. So put your feet on the rudder pedals if you can feel them, because you've used to fly, you've had the... Now, I'm just going to show you what amazing rudder this airplane has. So this is what a tail dragger does. So if I press the right, you can see that was nothing on the foot, was it? And then we'll just straighten it back up again. And then put a little bit on the left. Hardly any on the left, and she goes to the left. Yeah? And then we'll straighten it back up for you. So you have the feet as well now. You have the rudders.
And okay.
And to keep her straight, you need a little bit of left rudder all the time. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, you have control. That's it. That's a little bit too much left rudder. That's it. Beautiful. When you can feel it slapping your cheek on the right-hand side, that's too much. That's perfect. That's it.
Gosh, lovely, Anthem.
Marvellous. A little bit longer because I was a bit worried about Nick. Parking is always interesting because no brakes. And we're steering with the rudder, which is why I put the power on to go around corners. And you can see now I'm using massive movements on the rudder to get us straight. Okay. Ooh. Oof.
Oh, that was awesome.
Well, have you enjoyed that?
Just unbelievable.
What did you enjoy about it most?
Do you know what? It was really thrilling. There is a video. I haven't posted it yet, but it just has me with a smile from ear to ear from the point the aircraft took off. It's just very unique. You know, you don't often get to fly in an open cockpit aircraft these days. So it's a very unusual feeling. It's difficult to fly. The Tiger Moth wasn't easy. And as the CFI, Amanda Harrison, said to me, you know, if you couldn't fly a Tiger Moth, you weren't going to be put in a Spitfire. So it wasn't as easy as I thought to fly, but having 30 minutes in my logbook was greatly appreciated. Lovely aircraft, great condition. It was used in some films recently. So, yeah, really enjoyed it.
And did you find, well, there's two, I had a flight in one a while ago, and there's two things that sort of stand out, and just sort of see if I want to see your opinions of them, is one, yeah. I'm a fairly tall chap, but even I found that the cockpit kind of, you know, the instrument panel was like a, it's like being in sort of front of a grand piano or something that's on its side, and yeah. you really can't see much in front of it, you know, even though I'm pretty tall,
yeah, you can't. I couldn't see a great deal. Goodness knows how. Yeah. You could see from the back seat. And certainly moving around on the ground was interesting. We were lucky with the winds. The landing was a three-pointer, so I don't think that happens very often at Compton, given the winds over the hills there. Certainly, yeah, not easy to fly, not easy to see, and a little bit temperamental in the winds, I've got to say. I didn't find it that easy at all, but it was quite interesting. The panel in front of you is the Basic Six, so big shout out there for Basic Six. And you know, if you watch your instruments, if you can keep the aircraft nicely trimmed, and that meant I think a lot of left rudder just to keep it steady. Once you got into it, it was quite an impressive flight, but tricky to hold level and not let it drift off.
Did you find the controls are very, very sensitive?
Yeah, she did warn me. I think as we heard there, that small movements in the cockpit equaled big movements on the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was pretty true. And but it did really tempt me to want to get back into the cockpit and possibly re-energize my flying career.
Cool.
Excellent. Okay, after the break, we'll come back to you, Tim, for the X10 Top 10.
Alpha 709, ready, copy.
Yes, sir.
Alpha 709 to clear 2, Mike, Yankee Golf Foxtrot, via the Farmingdale 4 departure, radar vectors wavy, MJ, J174, Warren, Whiskey Alpha Romeo, November, J174, as filed, climate maintained 3,000, expect flight level 430, 10 minutes after departure. Departure frequency is 125.7, and squawk 1511.
Okay, I'm sorry, this is Farmingdale 4, apologize.
So basically, you aren't listening to me, is that what you're trying to tell me?
Sorry, what is that?
I said basically you weren't listening to me. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I didn't get the 3,043, 25.7, 25.1.
Okay, so after Wavy, it's MJ, Echo, Mike, Juliet, Alpha, Yankee, J174, Warren, Whiskey, Alpha, Romeo, November, J174, as filed.
Okay, it's Farmingdale 4, Wavy, MJ, J174, Warren, and J174, as filed.
That is correct. Okay, option 709, read back is correct. Hold for release. Call back when you're ready for departure.
We'll do that. Thanks again.
I'm Peter Dixon, and I listen to Extended, the ETOPS aviation podcast.
Okay, and on this episode of Extended, we've got our top 10 defunct airlines. So we look back at some of the classic airlines that are no longer with us. Maybe they went bust, collapsed, or were just merged into obscurity. Whatever happened to them? Let's take a look at some iconic brands that are no longer with us. Number 10, Olympic Airlines. Established in 1957, Greece's Olympic Airlines was another casualty of the post-9/11 air traffic downturn, an intense competition from Europe's budget airlines. But in the 60s, until under the leadership of Greek tycoon Aristotle Onassis, it had carved a reputation as the style leader. However, since the 1980s, debt and mismanagement set in, the Greek government desperately seeking a buyer for years, amid much legal wrangling. The name Olympic Airlines finally disappeared in 2009. Number 9, Ansett Airlines. Founded in 1936, Ansett was a domestic Australian airline that lasted in 2001, or 2002 for a brief restart, when bad management decisions saw Air New Zealand gain ownership of the airline, just when budget airlines started making inroads into Australia's domestic market. Sadly, in September 2001, the airline was grounded due to lack of cash, and an attempted revival also failed. Fun fact, the airline operated seaplane services using the short Sandringham well into the 1970s. Number 8, Danair. If you were one of the thousands, or perhaps millions in Britain, who tasted foreign trouble in the 1970s with a bucket and spade charter flight to Spain, it was probably through Danair, first formed in 1953. Now overtaken by the low-cost carriers, the seasonal charter airlines helped open up the skies to the mass market, giving the European working classes the opportunity to travel further. Danair survived until 1992, until it was absorbed by British Airways. Number 7, TWA. An American carrier that is no longer with us, Transworld Airlines, or TWA, was famous for being owned at one point by film director, aviation maverick Howard Hughes, who pushed for the introduction of the ultimate piston engine airline, the Lockheed Constellation. In the 1980s, the airline was buffeted by US airline deregulation, and in the 1990s by bankruptcy. Further bad luck was the TW 800 accident in 1996, with the carrier surviving a further 5 years until it was acquired under the American Airlines Group. Number 6, Sabena. One of the European casualties of the post-9/11 air transport downturn was Belgium's flag carrier Sabena, originally formed in 1923. It declared bankruptcy in late 2001. For a fun fact, in the late 1950s, it ran an intercity commuter helicopter service between Brussels and other European capitals. Number 5, BOAC. The British Overseas Airways Corporation, or BOAC as it was known, was the UK's long-haul international flag carrier until it was merged with BEA in 1974 to create British Airways. Although some wags claimed that BOAC stood for Better on a Camel, the airline did have the cachet for flying the first jet transatlantic passenger service in 1958 with a Comet. Fun fact, in the war years, BOAC flew camouflage mosquitoes to neutral Sweden to pick up ball bearings. Number 4, Laker Airways. Ahead of its time, Laker Airways was the first budget no-frills carrier, founded by aviation entrepreneur Freddie Laker. But unlike today's budget carriers, Laker went directly for the flag carrier's home turf, the transatlantic market with its SkyTrain in the late 70s. However, competition from the established carriers and the recession meant the airline ceased operations in 1992. Number 3, Braniff. Nowadays, special liveries, retrojets and unique colour schemes are all the rage, even by traditionally button-down carriers as they compete to show customers their fun side. In the 1960s, though, it was Braniff International Airways that made its airliners instantly recognisable by painting them in striking, single, bold colours. The design theme also extended to inside the aircraft, with flight attendants being issued space-age bubble helmets. The attention-grabbing airline also briefly opened to Concorde on US domestic flights from New York to Washington, D.C., under an agreement with BA and Air France. Braniff went out of business in 1982. Number 2, Imperial Airways. It may be a relic from a bygone age, but perhaps nothing sums up the adventure of early air transport across Britain's then-reaching far-reaching colonial outposts than a Hanley Page HP-42 biplane sweltering under the sun at some remote airfield. Truly a pioneering time for passengers and airlines alike, Imperial Airways transformed into BOAC in 1959. And at number 1, it is Pan Am. Where its transatlantic flying boats of the 1930s, or the glamour of the 1960s jet set, Pan Am is an iconic name that is still synonymous with air travel. In the 1960s, it even expanded its horizons by offering tickets to the moon, as well as being the launch customer for the Boeing 747. But after the oil shocks of the 70s, a combination of financial troubles followed by Lockerbie, and the air travel downturn of the First Gulf War caused the airline to fold in 1991. So that's it. That's the top 10 defunct airlines. What's on your list?
I don't know, BEA, BOAC, I suppose it's close to home, British Caledonian, miss all of those. I suppose BEA and BOAC, they merged into British Airways, didn't they? So I suppose they still exist. Miss some of the American carriers, I've got to say. Braniff were always interesting to see in terms of colour schemes. So I miss them. And Pan Am was a favourite, although, you know, in my early days of watching aircraft at Heathrow, they did get a bit boring. But now they're gone, of course, we miss them.
OK, yeah. What about you, Gareth? Do you miss any particular airlines?
I think it's a brilliant list. I think the one for me that always stands out is Dan Air. You know, I just look back, and we've run some of the sort of more historical pieces on GAR, and some of our more senior team members, shall we say, have got quite good collections of Dan Air imagery. And it just, I don't know why, it just always is the one that stands out to me as, you know, as a real sort of, you know, got gone but not forgotten, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, like Dan Air.
Or Dan Dare, as my dad used to relentlessly call it.
Well, it had the distinction of having the first female jet captain. Britain's and Europe's first female jet captain was a Dan Air pilot. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
First British airline to operate the Boeing 727.
Yep.
So good. The one I thought, one that nearly made it was Britannia.
Mm. Yeah. I guess topically, and rather sadly, you know, we've lost quite a few in recent years, haven't we? And you know, I don't know—is that bottomed out now? Do you think, or do you think we're on a plateau now, or is anyone else likely to go belly up?
Well, Air Italia keeps going keeps limping on online support. that's probably where sort of Sabina was back in you know, sort of. Sort of 2000, maybe. That's a bit bigger than obviously, you know, Italy is a bit bigger than Belgium, so, you know, they'll probably keep it going.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the one that seems to be perpetually in crisis.
Yeah, good. That's a great list. Well done.
Yeah, great list. Well done, Tim.
And remember, listeners, if you've got any missing airlines that you really, really miss, do let us know.
Okay, it's get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. Get us on Twitter or on our Facebook page. And so to the get involved and feedback section of the show.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
Over on Twitter, Pilot Simon down in South Africa has been creating some impetus behind the pilot problems issues related to lasers, and he has a tweet going around that says, catch the fools who point lasers at aircraft and charge them for attempted murder. So if you do see that tweet, please retweet it, and let's get the traffic up on that to make people aware of how big an issue it really is. Don't know about you guys, I know we covered it some time ago, but it just doesn't seem to be going away.
It's just, I know, I think I probably had a bit of a rant the last time, whenever it was. It's just the most pointless, thoughtless, dangerous, ridiculous thing that anybody could possibly do. And people just need to stop before something terrible happens. They really do.
Agreed. So we support that, Pilot Simon, and we'll continue to help retweeting that and keeping that traffic going. Greg emailed us, where do you guys get all the nice RT excerpts from, please? He wanted to share one of ours in the last show. Interestingly enough, it was one we used from Neil Braden. But as always, Live ATC very kindly give us permission to use their ATC feeds. So thank you very much to liveatc.net. Joseph Vibriel, he finally got his book from Roland White, was very pleased with that and tweeted us a picture. So that was great. Over to Tim's X10 top 10 from the last episode. We had a good number of responses, including this one from Joseph M. He says the Hispano Aviación HS50, the Hispano Aviación Alacran, the FAM Pulquil 2, the XB70, the Alfred Reynard R35, R36, R38, and the Henkel 100, and the Junkers J1. Gosh, that's a list, Tim.
Blimey.
It certainly is, yeah.
it certainly put me to have it doing a bit of research to try and look some of those up, so thank you. Thanks very much for those. Stephen Taylor said he really enjoyed the latest episode, and his top 10 cancelled aircraft would include the TSR-2. He said it would be near the top, but he'd like to add the Nimrod MRA-4, an aircraft he was lucky enough to see fly in when it visited King Los. He also flew the MRA-4 sim a few times as well, so thanks very much for that, Stephen.
Quite topical, Stephen, as well, obviously, with the what looks as if it may be the sad story of the yacht that is missing. Yeah, just I know that we sent a Hercules out to help with the search, because the guys on that boat were I think were all British, but I think for a lot of people highlighted our lack of a maritime patrol aircraft, and so that I've certainly seen that comment popping up a lot more in sort of news and social media in the last couple of weeks.
Doug Worrell wrote in and said his favourite cancelled aircraft is the Boeing Sonic Cruiser Mark 0.98, only with the handbrake on, he said. And going back a few episodes, he said favourite movies, High Road to China and The Black Sheep. Matt Willis, sorry, Tim.
Does the Sonic Cruiser cancel as cancelled aircraft if it didn't get past the pretty pictures? Past concept drawings?
Yeah, possibly. Matt Willis, who's Naval Air History on Twitter, said the Short Super Stirling, the Foland 118 Naval Fighter, the Ferry Delta 3 Interceptor, the Hawker P 1121 and the Buccaneer S2. He was so excited he then sent us another list. The Thinwin Sea Vixen, the Avro Arrow, the Martin Baker MB3, the Hawker Twin Sabre Bomber and the Gloucester F5. And the Rifleman UK said the TSR-2. That seemed to be a popular one. David, who's TA152C, said the MB5, Tim, which I know you appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, that's a beast, isn't it?
And then some feedback on the Pods Challenge from the last episode. And Amy asked us which era we'd like to fly in and which aircraft. Stephen Taylor said I'd like to fly the RAF in the 40s and then carry on right through to the 80s. Fantastic era.
Oh, that's a bit greedy.
Yeah, that was a bit naughty.
I'd like to start with the Wright brothers and be flying up to the present day.
Yeah. He said, imagine a career starting on Spitfires and ending on the Phantom or Jaguar. So I think Amy appreciated that as well. Doug Worrell came back in for Amy's challenge, said 1925, pushing the England to Australia record in a new Gypsy Moth.
Wow.
With that lovely new plane smell. Yeah, that's a great one. And Glenn Towler said it would have to be the 50s, the Hawker Hunter. What a wonderful aircraft. So I think we'd all agree with all of those.
Already done that, Glenn.
And over on Facebook, Air Smolik sent us a link on the F9R flight test. Interesting, and maybe we can talk about this in our future space episode. This, of course, is the Falcon 9 reusable, which made its second flight at its development facility. And if no one has seen the videos of the tests of the Falcon reusable, we'll put a link in the show notes. But it's the first time I've ever seen a rocket go up and come straight back down and land safely the same way it was standing when it took off. It's very impressive. And of course, Elon Musk and the team are working very hard to find a reusable rocket for the future space program. So really exciting stuff. And maybe we'll talk about that in our space related show. Okay, every episode we give away a copy of Doug Worrell's book designed to help those 1 in 4 people afraid of flying. So I'm going to put this to Gareth and Tim, actually. Who should we send this episode's book to from all those wonderful tweets and messages that we had? Anyone in particular?
We have to choose someone.
Has Stephen Taylor won one yet?
I don't think he's won a copy of this. I think he's entered other competitions.
Stephen is training to be a paramedic, which I think immediately gets a huge thumbs up from most people. Anyway, he's been a great supporter of Extended. Probably most listeners won't remember. I think Stephen found us a little bit late. And then, if you remember, went through a marathon session listening to every single episode.
Poor old soul.
I know. I think the therapy is going quite well now. I think he's all right. He came through that. That would be where my vote would go anyway, for a loyal supporter I know loves his aviation. I don't think Stephen has any issues himself, but I wouldn't mind betting that he's with fear of flying, but I wouldn't mind betting that he could pass that on to somebody who could make very, very good use of it.
Okay, Stephen, we'll send us your details and we'll get that off to you. Well done. Thanks again to Doug for providing these books for our listeners. And of course, you can buy a copy through our Amazon link on our website. Okay, over to Pod's Challenge. Amy has a new one for us.
Hi, Pete, Gareth and Tim, and hello to all the listeners of this episode of Extended. I have a new Pod's Challenge for everyone this episode, and this time I'd like to know, if you could night shoot with any free aircraft, which free aircraft would you choose? Which location would you shoot them in and why? Can't wait to hear the responses and I'll see you all in the next episode. Bye.
Yeah, there you go. That's a tricky one. Who wants to go first with that?
Do they have to be the same location?
I don't think so,
okay.
No.
I've got one that immediately came to mind.
Go on then.
I would like to do a night shoot with an F-117 Nighthawk at Tonopah.
Okay. Tim?
Probably English Electric Lightning outside a Hon aircraft shelter in... Well, this is about me a bit sort of just out of the era, but in the silver, you know, bare metal Lightning.
Do you know what? I've heard so much about it, but I've never seen it. I'd love to see an F-111 do the fuel dump, the ignited fuel dump.
That was a sight, I can tell you.
Yeah. Never seen that, so seeing that at night, and I've heard it so many times from our friends down under, I suppose I'd love to see it over Sydney, over the bridge. So one of the Australian Air Force F-111s lighting up the fuel dump over Sydney Harbour Bridge. That's me. If you've got one, email it into us, put it on Twitter, hashtag Pods Challenge, or over on our Facebook page. I think Amy's waiting to see what you've got to say. Okay, finally, before we go, promoting aerospace. Tim, do you have an aerospace topic you'd like to promote?
Sure, yeah. I mean, obviously we've got D-Day coming up, anniversary of D-Day. So I don't know if we mentioned this before. If we have, it's another plug. but Dakotas over Normandy. Basically, trying to assemble as many DC-3s or C-47 Dakotas as possible and do an airborne drop over there. If you, the place to go is www.daxovernormandy.com, and you can find out more about the event there, what they're trying to do. They're trying to raise 500,000 euros and really sort of get a proper sort of event to mark this sort of, you know, 70th anniversary.
Okay. Gareth, do you have a topic you'd like to promote?
I do. It's actually airshow related. It's not something we've seen in the UK yet, but there's a video which, if anyone hasn't watched it, this is where I'm going to point them. Three years ago as well, actually, prior to that, we were all raving about the Royal Air Force's Tornado JR4 roll demo with a pair of aircraft. And sadly, we haven't had them for a couple of years because the JR4 force is very busy. Yeah. But we do have a paired tactical display in Europe. It's called Ramex Delta. It's the French Air Force, and it's a pair of Mirage 2000Ns, which obviously is the N being nuclear, which is the nuclear capable version of what is one of my all-time favorite aircraft. This is just the most stunning pairs display. They've never been to the UK. I know that people are working on it for this year. There's no guarantees that it will happen, and I know that there are a lot of people looking forward to going and seeing them at various places in Europe. But if you go to Facebook and search for Ramex, which is R-A-M-E-X, Delta, Ramex Delta, they have a video on their Facebook page, which has been produced by the Army de l'Air. It's the 80th anniversary of the Army de l'Air this year, and they put a sort of 3.5-minute promotional video together for Ramex Delta, and it is just absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, I saw it yesterday. It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome.
I shared it on my wall yesterday, and I know it had been up for a couple of weeks, but I only just got around to sharing it. But it's all GoPro footage. It's inside, outside, front seat, back seat. Yeah, the back, obviously, it is a two-seat aircraft. It's just cracking, absolutely cracking. Sorry, Tim.
It's cockpit footage inside the jets as well.
Yes, it is. It is. So looking back towards whether it's the front or the back seat, but also looking out from the front of the aircraft, looking towards the other aircraft that are in that they're in formation with, and it's a very, I think, like the JR4s. It's there's some artistic license there. No one's saying that they actually go out and operate like this in theatre, because actually, truth be told, you know, with standoff weapons and such like now, that wouldn't make for a particularly good air show experience. But my goodness, it's dynamic. It's absolutely brilliant. There's some cracking footage in there. Go and look at it.
The finale is that they do a loft attack with a nuclear weapon. It brought the house down.
Yeah, very good.
Well worth a look, though.
Bring your sunglasses.
Yeah.
Okay, couple of shout-outs from me. First one is to say a big congratulations to everyone at the Airplane Geeks. Last week they hit 300 episodes and are about to celebrate their 6th birthday in a week's time. So congratulations to everyone there. Heard an amazing fact from Max on last week's episodes. They've had between 1.25 and 1.5 million downloads of episodes, which is just quite unbelievable. So,
well done, guys.
Yeah, well done to everyone there. And of course, we continue to support that program. So if you haven't listened to them, it's a great listen. That's airplanegeeks.com. And also, I'd just like to give a quick shout out to the team at Ode to Concorde, who are making a film about the iconic aircraft. So listen to this little promo for them.
Hi there, I'm Chris, and I'm the director of Ode to Concorde, a short film that celebrates this much-missed icon of design and glamour that landed for the final time over a decade ago. A few minutes looking on YouTube reveal that there have been loads of films on Concorde before, but really surprisingly, very few that revel in its lines and design, and none that have a look or a sense of aesthetics that's in keeping with this beautiful aircraft. What I've got in mind is a sort of visual poem that combines specially shot material with musings and memories from Concorde-connected people. This will be in voiceover, a sort of sound collage, voices of former pilots, famous passengers, designers, social commentators, people who have some really fascinating stuff to say about this plane. For me, one of the most amazing things about the Concorde story is the Anglo-French partnership at the very heart of it. So we'll be gathering interviews with French, English-speaking contributors too. Around the time that Concorde was going out of service, I was working as a director for Discovery Channel, and I made a number of short aviation-related films, including one on Concorde. This involves Sir David Frost in his usual seat because he was a frequent Concorde passenger, waxing lyrical about this beautiful symbol of design and function in perfect harmony, as he put it. This probably marked the beginning of my real fascination with the plane. Sadly, just a few weeks later, Concorde landed for the final time. And, like millions of others, I miss it and feel there really ought to be a film that celebrates Concorde in an artistic way. Visually, I want Ode to Concorde to look absolutely stunning. And with the generous help of some very talented friends of mine, I can confidently say that it's going to look absolutely great. We're not using any archive footage. The flying sequences will be CG, but they won't look CG. Those sections will have an impressionistic feel to them, a sort of lyrical quality, like memories. We'll be recreating Concorde in its heyday and producing something that's both nostalgic and inspiring.
Hi, my name's Paul. I'm the producer on the Ode to Concorde film. I've worked with Chris for over 15 years, and we've made a lot of great films together. We've got a brilliant team for this one. We've got art directors, we've got compositors, we've got cinema 4D designers, sound designer, camera crew, all Concorde fans, all willing to donate their time for nothing. So we're going to have a really cool film. We're all raring to go, but we've got a few hard costs that we'd like your help with. Location and facilities fees, some of the equipment hire, insurance, and some once-in-a-lifetime opportunities like filming the world's last Concorde flight simulator. We need to raise about £5,000 to get this film made. If you like the sound of it and think that you can help, then please donate through the website. Even a few pounds can make all the difference. And remember to check out our exciting range of perks. For all the Concorde fans out there, there's some really interesting stuff.
And a final thought to leave you with. If we get this film made, we'll be getting Concorde to fly again. Well, in a manner of speaking. Thanks very much for watching.
Okay, it's time to wrap up for this episode. We'd like to thank White Hearts, Live ATC and Peter Dixon for their contributions, and of course to Doug Worrell and Basic Six for supporting Extended. We'd like to thank Amy Parkin for another Pods Challenge. She caught us all on our heels there. Now, maybe our next episode could well be a space special, so let us know your space-related news, items and issues that you want us to talk about or that you'd like highlighted. Show notes for this episode with the accompanying pictures and links for the topics we've covered can be found at our website and on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter, and our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. Okay, Tim, where can we find you online?
Okay, you can find me online at there's either www.aerosociety.com, or I'm tweeting on at @RESTimR.
Okay, and Gareth?
Yeah, the usual, globalaviationresource.com for everything GAR-related, and you'll find me tweeting at Gareth_Stringer.
Okay, you can find me on everything that's called Mascot Hornet or at XTP Media. And with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Gareth Stringer.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Tim Robinson.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next time.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. And remember to stay tuned into this frequency, Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
And I like your watch. Is it a Blue Angels?
It's a Blue Angels.
I've got a Blue Angels one as well.
Extended.
This is XTP Media.